Hello there. Welcome once again to the Turkey Book Talk podcast. I'm the host, William Armstrong. In this podcast, I talk to authors about newly released books on Turkey and its region, which I've reviewed in the Hurriyet Daily News. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Podbean, or Stitcher, or you can follow via the Turkey Book Talk Facebook page or my website, armstrongwilliam.wordpress.com. At this point, I also want to flag up my new Patreon page for the attention of any wealthy benefactors out there or just fans of the show with some spare change. I currently produce this podcast for free, but through the Patreon account, you can help support me by pledging a small monetary donation on a per episode basis. Your support will help cover the costs and the time it takes to produce each podcast, and it will help me improve the show. You can find links with details on how to donate via all the Turkey Book Talk pages or via my website. But now on with the podcast, and my guest in this episode is Judith Sarıyan, the editor of a newly published version of Zabel Yasayan's book about her trip to Adana in the aftermath of the massacres of Ottoman Armenians there in 1909. The book, called In the Ruins, The 1909 Massacres of Armenians in Adana, is a very visceral account of Yesayan's experiences as part of a delegation from the Armenian Patriarchate in Istanbul, and it's well worth reading today. I started by asking Judith Sarıyan about who Zabel Yasayan was and what was the purpose of her trip to Adana after the killings.
Yes, I will start with the year Zabel was born. Zabel Yasayan was born in 1878. Her maiden name was Hovhannisyan, and she was born in Constantinople in the Skudari neighborhood. She learned to read at a very young age. Her father was a very important influence on her life. He taught her to read, and he spent many hours with her discussing important issues related to all kinds of things, but in particular, human rights, freedom of expression, and women's rights. And he was a very strong encourager. He was a strong role model, and he encouraged her to do whatever she wanted. And when she decided she wanted to be a writer, he was very much in favor of that. She did attend school for 4 years in Skudari, the Surpkhaç school, and she graduated from there when she was 14. But then she decided that she needed to go to Europe to study, and she had that opportunity when she was 17 years old. And she went to Paris to study. She also worked in Paris on an Armenian-French dictionary. She also worked as a tutor, and she lived a very simple life, and she wrote about that, which is quite interesting. The short story she wrote called The Man, which was described her student years in Paris. But she did come back to Bolis after she got married in Paris. She came back to Bolis in 1902 and was writing all along and was publishing and writing constantly. And so she was well known within the Armenian community. She seemed to be active in the political life of the community. She wrote frequently about women's issues in Zarik, which was an Armenian periodical, and she created quite a name for herself. So that when there was the 1908 restoration of the constitution, and the Young Turks, pushed the Sultan aside, she was optimistic, like many others in the Armenian community, that this was going to usher in a new age of more rights for minorities. So this was an optimistic time, and Yasayan actually, at this time, tried to start a peace organization. She had learned about other peace organizations when she was in Paris. She had been involved with one that had been started by a Polish woman in Paris, and she wanted to set up a similar type organization, specifically with women, other women, but she was working with men as well, and she was working with members of all ethnic and religious groups. She reached out to Turks she had met in Paris. So she had made some interesting strides after the restoration of the constitution in working on this project, but it never was to come to fruition because not even a year after 1908, the new government, the new constitution, there was the shocking news about the massacres of Adana. And this happened in April of 1909. And the Armenian Patriarchate in Constantinople, which was, very much a leadership organization within the Armenian community, sent down the first delegation, and then and that included mostly people who could provide medical relief, emergency relief. And they came up with the second delegation, and they asked Zabel Yassayan to go on the second delegation. So this was quite a significant invitation on the part of the Patriarchate, because Yassayan was known as a writer, and she was an activist. She didn't have a medical background, so she really was asked to be a leader, and she was given the authority by the Patriarchate to go to Adana to help provide relief for the orphans, to work on their behalf. Perhaps the Patriarchate also expected her to write about her experiences, but that wasn't specifically the directive she was given. So she did then sail down from Bolis. I think they first stopped in Izmir or Smyrna, and then the boat went to Mersin. On the boat, she describes very clearly, there were others, including the second court marshal. So these were Turkish military officers who had been sent down from Bolis by the government to investigate what had happened. Now, there had been a first court-martial, and that had been organized by the local political people in Adana. So there were young Turks, who were in charge in Adana. There had been a very recent change in government because of, the 1908 constitution. So there were young Turks in power in Adana, and they had established the first court-martial, and they had come to the conclusion that there were several people who were involved, or who were, they pointed the finger at in terms of, who had started the massacres. And the conclusions and the arrests were again, a second shock to the Armenian community, because several innocent Armenians were found guilty, as well as innocent Turks. And surprisingly, or not so surprisingly, none of the local leaders were found culpable. And this is something that is very important, and it's, there has been research on this outside of Yesayan's book. But Yesayan herself comments on some of the questions about culpability. She comments on this in her personal letters that she wrote to her husband. And we have published five of her personal letters that she wrote to her husband in English translation, and they are included in our volume, in our publication. So, for instance, she mentions the editor of a newspaper. She doesn't give his name in the letter, but we're pretty sure it's the editor of Itidal. And he had been writing very inflammatory comments. He was really inciting people to violence against the Armenian community. There were two waves of massacres. And so, if you go into the details, you can see that there was the initial wave, and then there was a calm. Military officers or military was sent down to protect the Armenian community, and then the massacres reignited in a much more virulent form. Many more people died on the second round, and these were being instigated by local CUP leaders, or at least in the case of the editor of Itidal, it was definitely proven to be the case. So she brings that up in her letters. However, she doesn't write about that in the book, and we can talk about that if you'd like. But so she goes down to Adana with the second military court-martial, and it's, and she's on the boat, and she describes, the trepidation that they all have on what they're going to see when they arrive. She also, it's very interesting that she's careful, in the book not to point the finger at, at the CUP or the Young Turks. And as I mentioned earlier, she does comment on that in her personal letters. She is going to write the book for the entire nation, for the entire Ottoman fatherland.
There had been violence at various points in the late 19th and early 20th centuries targeting Armenians. And the massacres of 1909 came at a time, as you mentioned, when the political situation was very dynamic and very fluid. And there was the Young Turk Revolution in 1908, which restored constitutional rule to the Ottoman Empire. But then there was a counter coup by Sultan Abdul Hamid II that wrestled power back. And then there was another fight back by the Young Turks, which reasserted the Young Turk Revolution. What was the relationship between these power shifts and the massacres of Armenians in Adana around the same time?
Well, there are a lot of questions about this, and I'll give you my understanding. However, I don't know that Yesayan really went into great depth analyzing this, but she does talk about it again in her preface. She basically starts out the preface by saying, "Hardly had the political storms of March subsided in Istanbul than we Armenians, who should have had better reason than all others to rejoice over the Liberation Army's victory and hail it with jubilation, were wounded to the quick by the massacres in Cilicia." So here she's basically saying there was the counter-revolution, and then the Liberation Army won back against the counter-revolution. And so the Armenians, would have been jubilant. And then there were the massacres of Adana. So we can probably understand that, there was a lot of unrest in many provinces. And, Adana would not have been different because, there was a changing of the guard. And, your leaders, your traditional leaders who had been there for, perhaps, decades, because Sultan Abdul Hamid had been in power for decades, were being, there was a change and you had new leaders coming in. So there to some extent, there was a vacuum in terms of leadership. But on the other hand, people were continuing their lives. You had in Adana, this was a fairly important commercial center. The markets were open. Around Adana, it was a very fertile area, was an agricultural area. People were farming. So, people were moving on with their lives. There was some unrest, but by and large, this was I think this came as a total surprise, to the Armenian community, not only in Adana, but around the empire.
And the book is a really great read, but it's often so vivid that it's almost difficult to read at points because the descriptions of suffering and injuries are very visceral and still shocking today. Do you think that was a deliberate decision on Yesayan's part?
Yes, I think we have to see that Yesayan was very deliberate in what she wrote. She always took her writing extremely seriously. In fact, I wanted to say this quote because this is a quote from her, not from the book, but she said, "Literature is not an ornament, a pleasant pastime, a pretty flower. Literature is a weapon to struggle against injustice." And I believe that Yesayan saw this work in the ruins as a struggle against injustice. And she, as I said, was addressing it to the entire Ottoman fatherland. She wanted to show everyone, particularly the Young Turks and the new government, that the Armenians had in effect been sacrificed for the sake of progress in the new government or within the new constitutional rule. That the Armenians had actually been sacrificed in these massacres, and that they had fought very hard alongside the Young Turks. There had been a very strong alliance with the Young Turks to achieve these changes and this progress. And so that what had happened is that they had been turned on, by the people in Adana. And again, we can ask questions about exactly how it was organized or not, but they had been turned on, and they had to suffer the consequences of their support for freedom and their support for for removing, the Sultan. So this is a really important point, and I think that Yesayan wants to show that. She wants to find common ground within the nation for all progressive people who could understand what had happened, to look at it and to see what had truly happened in the country. She wanted to find common ground and support so that this would not happen again. So she's very clear in her preface about addressing the book to the country. But at the same time, you know, she wrote this book in Armenian. So she could have expected the primary readers to be, you know, Armenians. And she wanted to show the Armenians that, you know, this is what happened. And so I think she was very, you know, she didn't want to flinch in any way from the horror of it. And I think this is fascinating that she was not trying to, you know, kind of gloss over it or in any way imply that it was less horrific than it was. Because I think she wanted Armenians to understand it. But I think she also wanted everyone to understand that this is the price that a country will pay if they're not supporting freedom. This is the price that the Ottoman fatherland is going to pay. And she says they're going to pay this price over and over again unless they see their country in its true colors. And, you know, again, the quotes are right here, but it's, you know, she says unless they take a close look at their bleeding country and see it in its true colors. And I think this is, you know, something that Yesayan felt so strongly about that she was willing to, you know, to really be very brutally honest in what she saw and experienced.
And the account of her trip down to Adana was published very soon after she returned to Constantinople. What was the publication history? Who published it, and what was the aim in publishing the book?
Well, she did publish the book very soon after her return. At the end of the manuscript, the original manuscript, it does say her name, as well as I'm fairly sure it gives the date 1910, Constantinople 1910. It doesn't say her name; it just says Constantinople 1910. But she it is published in 1911, and I'm going to take a look at the, so the first edition was published by the Armenians Publishing Society, and that was in 1911, and there was another, there have been other editions, but that was the edition that was published in Istanbul. I won't give you the long Armenian name of the Publishing Society. This Publishing Society is no longer in existence. However, Aras recently republished it, and they did that in Istanbul in March 2010, and it has an introduction by Mark Nishanyan. And that was very faithful to the original. And what was the purpose? Well, you know, this is a good point, and it's something that Mark Nishanyan talks about. But after the massacres of the 1890s, the Hamidian massacres from 1894 to 1896, the Armenians, the intellectual community of Istanbul was in danger. In fact, many of them left the city. And, you know, this is when Yesayan went to France to study because her father was concerned about her safety. So there were others who had left. And they were not allowed to write about the massacres in the 1890s. This was, you know, strictly forbidden by the Sultan and by, you know, the law. And so Armenians couldn't write about what had happened. In 1909, because of the restoration of the constitution, they were allowed to write. And so Yesayan's account is not the only account of the massacres of Adana. There is actually another account by a woman, Arshaguni Teotig, which was also published very soon after the massacres. And there are other accounts by Armenian men and by missionaries as well. But so this was something new and different that they could write about it. So it was a very important moment when this book came out because it was particularly, you know, graphic and very powerful. And I think that this was a time of a great deal of discussion, of political consternation for the Armenian community between, you know, from the time of the massacres of 1909 to the time of, you know, the genocide in 1915. The Armenian community wasn't sure what to do. And one really good example of this, in Yesayan's work, she wrote after the genocide and after she had escaped Istanbul or Constantinople, she went to first to Bulgaria, then on to Tiflis and Baku, and then eventually Paris. But she wrote a novel, which was autobiographical in nature, called My Soul in Exile. And we also published that 2 years ago when we published The Gardens of Silidar. And this story takes place in that period of time, 1909 to 1915. And again, it reflects this state of unease of the Armenian community. And Yesayan raises these important questions. What is the role of art in an environment which is so politically charged, where you don't know from one day to the next what is going to happen to your community? And so people were worried, people were scared, and the question about what is the role of art in this really is something she addresses and she delves into in that novel. So this is the reason she's writing. It's so important for her to write. It is crucial for her to do this. You know, she says it is a struggle against injustice. And, you know, as I said, I think that was her goal. She was taking on a leadership role. She felt it was her duty. She had been given the authority by the Patriarchate, and she felt it was her duty to write this book.
Now, this is a new version of the book, and it's only just been published by by the Armenian International Women's Association. And I think it's the first English translation of the book to appear.
That's correct. It had been partially translated by the same translator in earlier larger volumes, but only just a few chapters.
Ah, okay. So what I'd like you to do is just to read out a passage that you've chosen from the book. And before reading it out, first of all, just introduce your selection and describe why you've chosen it.
Yes, I'm reading from the preface, and she basically is writing this preface to explain who is her audience, who is the target audience for the book. And as I understand it, she wrote the preface after she completed the other eight chapters. So she had completed her description of the massacre, the aftermath of the massacres. She completed her description of going on the road to see what had happened in the more rural parts of Adana. And then when she finished that, she wrote the preface. So I think it was something that, you know, she wanted to think about and then to, you know, and then sort of to distill from all the thoughts that were going through her mind. Thus I shall be endeavoring to communicate to all the members of our nation, but as well to all those compatriots who have remained indifferent to our instinctive reactions and our pain, a sense of the unrelieved misery of the somber existence that I shared for 3 months. If I succeed in faithfully depicting a people who, maddened by horrors of fire and bloodshed and driven to irrational decisions, flee their native land, if I succeed in evoking the nightmares that darken even their native sky and cast a pall of mourning over it for eyes blinded by tears that make the climate inclement for their emaciated, defenseless bodies and make its soil dry and barren, like the breasts of a mother without milk. And if I succeed in honestly showing that backs bent under the whips of such persecution have feelings and a will, and that their souls are full of the sacred fire, I will, I believe, have rendered a service to our common fatherland. For then no one will dare approach with contempt or hatred the humble people who, armed with unbending faith, shall blindly, instinctively, despite revolting injustices and the gallows erected on the still smoldering ruins, put their bleeding, ravaged existence at the disposal of progressive movements and stand up before the greatest danger now threatening the fatherland: the return of tyranny in whatever novel forms and masks it may appear. It is essential, I repeat, that all of us see our bleeding country in its true colors, that we learn to take a hard, courageous look at it. What I saw and heard was such as to rock the foundations of the whole state. In principle, no one affirms the contrary. That sentiment was for me, as a free citizen and true child of this land, enjoying the same rights and charged with the same duties as everyone else, a powerful motivation to write these pages without reserve.
That was Judith Sarayan talking about Zebar Yesayan's book, In the Ruins, the 1909 Massacres of Armenians in Adana. You can find a link to my review of the book via armstrongwilliam.wordpress.com. I've also posted some links to other pieces that you may be interested in related to the subject, including an article I wrote last year about a trip to an abandoned train station on the Turkey-Armenia border. You can subscribe to this podcast via iTunes, Podbean or Stitcher. If you like the podcast, please feel free to rate it on iTunes or Stitcher, or you can like the Turkey Book Talk Facebook page. Also, again, just another plug here for you to consider supporting the podcast via the new Patreon account, where you can again make a donation of however much you want to help the cost of producing each episode. Find links to all that on the Turkey Book Talk pages or on my website. So I'll leave you now to rummage around behind the sofa for spare change. And in the meantime, until next time, thank you very much for listening.